Welcome into episode number 24 of From the Braves Booth alongside Joe Simpson and our producer-engineer Jonathan Chadwick. Ben Ingram here with you. Can you believe we've made it 24 episodes?
No, that's two dozen.
Yeah.
That's ridiculous.
I thought they'd run us out of here by now.
Yeah, after about seven, I figured they'd give us one more and that'd be it.
Yeah. Just kind of let us down easy.
Yes.
I guess they're not paying attention.
No.
Must be what it is. This is From the Braves Booth. This is our little podcast, and we're sitting in the booth here at home at Truist Park. It's good to be home. And the Braves here for a pretty good while. We'd love to hear from you. You can email us, bravesbooth@gmail.com. And we got a bunch of questions we'll get to a little bit later in our show today, as we always do. But yeah, going back to that thought, good to be home. Braves here for eight ball games. Got off to a tough start last night. Bunch of walks. Very ugly inning there against the Brewers last night in game one. But we'll see a really good pitching matchup tonight. Joe, can't wait for tonight.
Yeah, last night, real quick, it wasn't just walks. It was a couple of errors, too, that were unusual for both the Braves and the Brewers and the number of errors they made. The walks late in the ball game were the ones that were very costly. Tonight, Max Fried goes against Corbin Burns. That's a matchup you'll take any Saturday, any Monday, yeah, or Friday, or any time, because it's going to be a good one. I expect a low-scoring game.
Yeah, if we get to the end of the year and those two guys are top five in the Cy Young, I won't be shocked. I don't think anybody will.
No, and Burns is back to being the guy he was last year, too.
Uh-huh. And he won the award last year, so should be a good one. And then the Braves have the Red Sox come in, and the Padres come in. So some good teams. No, the Red Sox are struggling, but the Red Sox are the Red Sox. They're always going to be tough. And then we saw San Diego, and I'd say they're here in the first month of the season. That's one of the best teams we've seen.
Of the teams we've seen, I'd put them right in there tied with the Mets,
yeah,
for second. The Dodgers were the best team we've seen. But I'd put them right in there with the Mets, obviously top five.
I agree with you. I think from what I've seen, and we've only seen the Brewers one game, but the Dodgers look like the best team I've seen. Padres and Mets very close. This Brewer team pretty close as well.
Well, by the time this series is over, I may have to recalculate the, yeah, standings there, because this is an outstanding Milwaukee team. Their offense is really kind of scary. And it's scary because Christian Yelich is back. You know, they gave him a ton of money once they acquired him from Miami. And outside, it's hard to say, outside an MVP year, you don't disregard that. But he hadn't done much since because he's been hurt. And he looks healthy, good bat speed, swinging hard. And having him in the middle of their lineup is a huge boost.
Yeah, he's the guy. And you and I were talking about the Mets, where they have a really good team, but I don't know that we could pinpoint one guy and say, that's the guy for the Mets.
Yeah.
Yelich is that guy for the Brewers.
Yeah.
Good supporting cast, but he's the guy for them.
Very good supporting cast, and they have some guys right now that have come to town hot. You know, Adames is hot. Rowdy Tellez is hot. So it's not just Yelich, but ultimately everything will revolve around him, in my opinion.
For the Braves, you could say that Ronald Acuna might be that guy, and he hit a 450-foot home run and then fell on his back last night. That was hilarious. But it's good to see him in there. And something comes to mind that you said last night. He had a play in right field last night where he was tracking over by the line, tried to make a basket catch, didn't get there. And you said, give him another few weeks, that catch is made.
Yeah.
So that gives you an idea. He's still extremely talented. He's so good, but he's still finding his way back to Ronald Acuna speed, isn't he?
There's one thing that I find interesting, and maybe it is injury related, and that is if he's got to bend over and extend himself to reach his glove down to get a ball like he did on that basket catch, or even a couple of hard hit ground balls, it seems to be a little difficult for him. Maybe he doesn't trust putting all his weight on his right leg,
uh-huh,
just yet, and that his quad will hold, his knee will hold, so that he can really get down there low. It bears watching. Those are the only things I've seen since he's come back that would indicate he had had an injury.
What's the worst injury you had?
Ankle. I was only on the disabled list one time, fortunately, and I did a Mickey Mantle thing in spring training when I was in AAA with the Dodgers. My spikes locked on a sprinkler head, and I was about to make a throw home from the outfield, and everything turned except my ankle.
Oh,
my foot was locked on that sprinkler head, so I really messed it up. But I wasn't on the DL that long, able to come back. It's not something that bothers me now, but that was the worst injury, and I was fortunate it wasn't any worse.
Well, I know this is completely apples to oranges at best, that injury versus what Acuna had. But how long did it take you to trust that ankle once you came back?
Oh, a while. Yeah. And that's, I relied on my wheels a lot.
Uh-huh.
And always had it taped up, you know, and secured. I didn't have to wear a brace or anything like that in those days. But it took a while. It took a good month to get past that and mentally know that I was okay.
And just day by day, I'm sure he's going to get closer and closer.
Yeah. Well, the more he has these plays that I'm talking about, the more he's going to realize, oh, I'm okay. I can get down. I can get low.
Uh-huh.
I'm okay. My legs are good. And then he'll be fine.
Yeah. Well, speaking of guys that you want to be fine, Tyler Matzek is towards the top of that list. I know as soon as we finish this up, I've got the Brian Snitker report, and one of the questions I'm going to ask him is about Tyler. I would imagine that health-wise, he's fine, but he's been walking a lot more guys we're used to seeing, and maybe this is premature on my behalf, but I wonder if he's struggling with some of the mental issues again like he was a few years ago. And I think six of the last seven batters he's faced, he's either walked or hit, and we're just not used to seeing that kind of wildness out of Tyler.
We haven't seen that in the last 2 years. He's made this beautiful comeback from having some problems with command that were related to confidence and mental approach and that sort of thing. I hope that none of that has creeped back in because he's been so successful and what he's done has been working. So don't change anything, but he looks extremely frustrated right now. I hope he's okay physically.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to worry about his mental right now as much as I hope physically he's okay. Because ball's not anywhere near where it was last year or any time prior to that last two seasons ago. His location's been really off.
Yeah, and you look at last night, and the one inning that's the difference maker for Milwaukee is that one sixth inning where they said nine of the plate. They had one hit.
Yeah.
It was a bunch of walks.
Yeah, and that hit was an infield hit.
Mm-hmm. And it just drive you crazy. And, you know, you play a team like that, you have one, you give up one inning like that, you're toast against a good team like that.
Well, their bullpen's too good to give up the lead. That's the problem.
Yeah. Well, we got to see a couple of homers last night. Mentioned the Acuna homer. Dansby's home run was really encouraging going to right field. And I want to go back to something you said last night that we said 1,000 times. Him going that way helps him so much. And usually when he does that, he starts to get hot. Maybe he's the guy to watch now.
You know, I haven't talked to Dansby about this, and I should, if he's willing to talk about it. But you know, he's going to be a free agent at the end of this season. Last year, there were some shortstops who got tremendous money, tremendous contracts. And if you're a shortstop on the verge of free agency, you can't help but notice that. Whether it's Seager or Correa or Trevor Story, whomever, those guys are hitting a lot of home runs.
Yeah.
And they play shortstop. That's a great asset. And if somehow that has crept into Dansby's thinking, that's too bad because he's a good player in his own way. He plays a great brand of shortstop, and he hits the ball with authority. But he doesn't need to hit 30 homers. You know, this team doesn't – if he did, that was great, but not at the expense of him striking out 220 times.
Right, and that seems to be the issue, not just for Dansby, for the whole team right now. A lot of strikeouts for this bunch.
Too many.
Yeah.
Yeah, too many. A lot of chase. You know, that's a new word, not new, but one that's really emphasized among analytics, and that is chase. How much do these hitters chase? And the Braves chase a lot, especially on sliders.
Yeah, and it makes you start to think, okay, you need maybe a little bit more balance, a few more lefties in there. Even just one would go a long way. I mean, I think about Eddie Rosario's role and how good he was towards the end of last season. If you had that guy back in this lineup right now, I think that would help a lot of that.
No question. It would help a lot. There's a lot of talk, too, and speculation about Michael Harris at AA, who's a left-handed hitter, could help solve some of that. But it may be a little premature to be thinking about him in the big leagues just yet. Do you go out and get someone else until Rosario comes back? I guess that's an option, too. A third option would be Drew Waters. He's a switch hitter.
Right.
And off to a good start at AAA. But, you know, Drew's been hurt a lot. And I hate to say, you know, you got to keep your eye on him, make sure he's healthy. But we talked about this in spring training. I was disappointed for Drew that he got off to a good start, hit a home run in the first game of spring training, The second game, had a walk, stolen base, scored a run. He was off to the races, boy, to make this ball club. And then the next game, you know, he's in there. He was in the lineup.
Right.
Got scratched for a hamstring that was bothering him.
And we hadn't seen him.
Yeah, we haven't seen him since until he just came back recently. So it's kind of like, I don't know if he's jinxed that way in spring training. It's the second year in a row that he's had an injury in spring training that really waylaid him. But I want to see Drew play a month and make sure he's okay.
Well, here's the thing. If he were healthy and rolling, he'd be, in my opinion, the right answer for your issues. Because think about how challenging this is with the time of the year it is. Maybe you're looking to make a deal. It's June or July, sure. But in the first week of May, teams aren't going to be quite as willing to trade right now, I don't think, for what you're looking for. Teams, unless you're the Reds, feel like they're in it.
Yeah.
And then as far as Michael Harris goes, very excited about his future, very excited about his talent, what he could be, but you could argue that it might be rushing him to bring him up right now.
And I think it would be, in my opinion, that he needs to get a full season of Double-A and Triple-A baseball under his belt, and then let's see about next year or the end of this season.
Mm-hmm. Well, you just hope that you have somebody who's ready to step in there, and Michael – or rather, Drew would be the guy, in terms of how old he is, his experience, where he is in the minor leagues, he would make the most sense if he were ready to go in there and had a full season worth of reps to this point, full month or so. In the meantime, you just kind of figure this thing out and hope that you can get Rosario back quicker. And
well, yeah, you can wish and hope, but the fact is, as you mentioned, got two more games with these Brewers, then the Red Sox. You may run into Nathan Eovaldi,
right,
or Houck for Boston, even though they have been struggling. The team's been struggling. Those two guys are very capable of shutting you down. And then who is it after that?
Padres.
The San Diego Padres come to town, and we've already seen their staff. So it's not going to get any easier anytime soon. So I'm sure Alex Anthopoulos and his staff are out kind of looking around a little bit, see what they can do to improve the ball club. They always are.
It's a challenging time of the season because you just saw the Mets. Now you get the Brewers, Red Sox, Padres, and then the Brewers again. As soon as this homestand ends, we go right to Milwaukee and see these guys for three up there before we go to Miami. And they're never easy in that ballpark with that pitching.
No.
So, yeah, it's big leagues, man. You don't get too many breathers.
It is the big leagues. It is the arms are incredible these days in the big leagues. People sometimes talk about expansion. Well, don't expand. There's not enough pitching to go around. I'm not sure about that anymore.
Yeah.
Everybody seems to be well-stocked with good arms because we keep seeing them.
Yeah, we sure do. For this bunch tonight, I think you go into it and say, like, it'd be nice to win tonight. You don't want to have to salvage the finale versus the Brewers to avoid a sweep. Great crowds to this point of the season. We continue to expect really good crowds, and we've seen some good weather as well. But this team is in the same place they're in this time last year. Pretty sure the exact same record through 28 games is where they were last year. And while all is well that ends well, you can't go into where you are right now and expect the exact same blueprint to play out again like it did in 2021.
I was looking at the standings today, Ben, and it almost mirrors last year.
Really?
With one exception. There's one team that's playing their tails off, and that's the Mets.
Yeah.
Nobody last year ran off and left the Braves. We kept saying, I'm sure glad the Nationals aren't playing well. I'm sure glad the Phillies haven't done this because they have an opportunity to run off and leave everybody. Well, the Mets are doing that. And it's not one of those things where you can say, well, let's look at the All-Star break and hope that we're close. Well, sure, you want to be close, but you better have your eye on those guys in New York because they're good.
Yeah, they sure are. And, yes, you do have expanded playoffs this year, but – I don't want to be June the 10th and thinking, okay, well, it's time to pivot towards one of those wild card spots because the Mets are going to win this thing.
No, you want to win the division again.
Yeah, exactly. You have three division winners, and then you have three wild card teams from each league. So it expands a little bit, but it's nice to have that parachute, but I don't want to think about that parachute until it's September.
Think about who we just talked about already.
Yeah.
You know, Milwaukee's in first place, but there are some other teams whether it be San Diego, it might be Colorado or the Giants out west. There are a lot of good ball clubs that could be the second and third wild card. and not give you room to get in there.
Yeah.
Start playing better, win some games, get back to 500, climb over, and try to go on a good 10-day run.
It was good to take that final game in New York and gain a split there. I think that helped a lot. I think that'll instill some confidence. Not that they were lacking for any, but just knowing that the Mets playing as well as they have, you went into their house and still split with them. And I think that goes a long way. But now you got to keep that same intensity and that same ability to go win big games against everybody else.
Well, and consider this. After the Braves split with New York, they went in and got 7 runs in the 9th inning against the Phillies and beat them the other night. Come on.
Yeah. Well, we talked about this last night, Joe, what that can do to the Phillies. What about what it can do to the Mets?
I know.
They win a game like that, they're thinking, we can do anything.
Well, it's not just up to the Braves to knock the Mets off in the division.
Right.
You other guys got to help out a little bit too, you know.
Right.
And for the Phillies to do that, that was hugely demoralizing for them.
Yeah, it sure was.
And the rest of us.
Yeah. Well, and two, because the Phillies are thinking, maybe this is the year. We finally had a winning record last year. The bullpen has been our Achilles heel. And here they are the first month into the season, and the same issue again. Giving up big leads late.
Right. Scattering reports I get from people who have played the Phillies say they are kind of going through the motions, a little lethargic. There's no tremendous energy or anything. And that's sad because they are a great team.
Yeah.
I think on paper they're a very good team.
Yeah, sure are. Well, speaking of on paper, I got a 3 pages worth of questions and comments here from listeners.
So somebody must be listening.
Yeah, unless maybe these are the same people every single week.
Well, it could be, but that's okay too. We welcome that.
Sure do. I know J-Chad's going to join us. We'd love to hear from you, bravesbooth@gmail.com. That's how you can send us a question. And if you're listening to this episode and you want to fire off a question, you don't want to wait till next week or whatever, do it. Send it in. J-Chad gets the inbox, and he goes through all these things and prints them out. And if they get past JC, they make the cut, and they usually make the air. So
good.
Fire away with any questions you might have. I'll go ahead and start us off. This is more of a comment. This is from Dennis in Greer, South Carolina. He says, Ben and Joe, just a brief email to express my appreciation and gratitude for the excellence the two of you consistently provide in describing the action in Braves games. This is my favorite part of this email. I will soon be 80 years old and have lost most of my vision, so I value the words and pictures that you paint with your narratives. You both are exceptional broadcast professionals. Thank you, Go Braves. And that means so much to me. I know it does to you, Joe, to hear from people, no matter what your situation is. But I have always wanted to broadcast for folks who are visually impaired and do my best to put them in the ballpark. When I was calling minor league games, we had a visually impaired fan that listened all the time. And he gave me some pointers at one point in my career when I was young, and I've always taken that with me. And knowing that people who are listening to us on the radio, whether they're visually impaired or they're not, they still aren't in the ballpark, and they don't see what we see. And so if we can get a thumbs up and a great job by people like that, that means a lot to me.
That's very much appreciated, Dennis. And I know, too, Ben, it may have been the person you were talking about in the minor leagues, but I know there was one person that appreciated one of the routines you have at the start of a game is to describe the uniforms mm-hmm. and everybody what they're wearing that day. And I think that's a great thing. I never heard anybody really use that habitually in their broadcast, and I think it's a great thing, and I think it's terrific for people who can't see the field.
Yeah, we get a chance to put people right here in the ballpark with us, and that's how we want them to feel everything tonight. JC, by the way, how you feeling?
I'm good.
Good, man.
You look good today.
Thank you. Got some rest.
He's got his Braves sweatshirt on. He's looking really good.
Yeah.
My arms are still a little sore.
From hanging?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, I thought you got a bum rap on that deal. Both from the – I mean, we were teasing you, but the TV guys kind of went overboard, and there's going to be hell to pay for them.
You can guarantee that.
From the radio side. But I thought you did a good job considering that 7 train was rocking and rolling when
sure
you were
it was rocking.
God.
You know, and Jeff got on it, and it might as well have been sitting still.
Oh, it was like we were going across the salt flats. It was so flat and easy.
Yeah. Well, to bring people up to date, you guys had a contest on the 7 train leaving City Field to see who could hold on to the railing that runs along the top of the subway cart the longest. And you hung up there for about 30 seconds.
Around 30 seconds.
Jeff hung for a minute. But to exactly what Joe's saying, the path that you were hanging was significantly just up and down, wavier, swaying all over the place.
He looked like a hanger with no shirt on it. You know, that, yeah. that, just going back and forth.
Yeah.
The thing was banging, but you know what I mean? And it was difficult, but I certainly had a tougher road than Jeff.
Yeah.
But that's fine.
Yeah.
You know, we'll see what happens in August.
Challenge him again in August.
Yeah, it's coming.
All right. What do you got? You got a question for us?
I got one from Barry Howell in Madison, Mississippi. Is that anywhere near your...
That's my hometown.
Okay.
Yep.
Barry Howell wants to know, what was your take on Ozzy getting all over Ozuna about his base running while on the field at Texas?
I thought it was great. I knew that there was a part of it where Ozzy was being truthful,
yeah.
but he was joking about it to yeah. a degree.
Right.
But I like that path to kicking a guy in the rear end. And Ozzy, even if it's a guy who's a veteran who's older than you, Ozzy is just as impactful as anybody else. And if he needs to kick somebody in the rear end, he will.
Ozzy wants to win.
Mm-hmm.
Sure he does.
And so there's zero. I take zero issue with Ozzy getting on anyone. Ozzy wants to win, and he's out there playing hard, and he's hustling. And when maybe he doesn't see someone that he feels like is doing the same, he's going to call him out.
Accountability.
Yep. Yeah, I thought it was fun. I mean, there was, like you said, Ben, there was a little bit of truth to it, but he was having fun with it at the same time, and I'm glad for the attention it got.
Mm-hmm.
This question is from Matthew in Houston, Texas. You guys have kind of addressed Michael Harris, so I'll skip that part. But the second question is, how does the mood on the charter flight feel after a series win compared to a series loss? Is there a significant difference?
I'd say yes. I'd say it's a little more subdued. After a series loss, it wasn't all that much fun and games leaving Texas to go to New York, because everybody knows the Rangers are not a real good team right now. But there was some fun and excitement coming home from New York because of the split, winning that game against the Mets and coming home with a split. It was much better.
It was. I feel like when you're on those flights after you win, there's just a sense of invincibility where you could have the worst turbulence in the world, and I don't think anybody really care.
Mm-hmm.
You feel great about that flight. You're going home. You just took a series or had a winning road trip, and it's a great feeling. This is from Paul in Macon. I love that story Joe told about Don being custodian of the culture, taking care of rookies, showing new people the ropes. I love a good reminder that kindness and kindness is encouraged and appreciated no matter one station in life. Who are some others along the way who deserve a shout out for their kindness in your experience in the Braves organization or prior to that? Appreciate the email, Paul.
It's a good question. Since I'm the oldest and been around the longest to see guys like this, I'll start. Bill Russell, the shortstop for the Dodgers, was that guy for me. He's the one that took me around, showed me the so-called ropes, and I never paid for a thing. I think that came across in our broadcast too, but that was part of it. You know, you went on the road, you didn't pay for anything, and you pay that forward also when you become that veteran player and take care of things. For the Braves, I'll start with our broadcast partners, Skip, Pete, Don. They did the same thing when I first got here. They were the guys that were the cultural leaders, if you will, and hardly ever. I mean, I had to sneak up to the maitre d' and pick up the check up there before they could get it. otherwise, they were always doing that. And all three of them paid homage to Ernie.
Yeah.
All of them. I one time said to Skip, I said, now, here for the play-by-play story is the voice of the Braves, Skip Carey. And Skip quickly corrected me. He didn't reprimand me. He just said, Joe, I'll just tell you the same thing Ernie told me one time when I said those very same words. He said, Skip, we're all the voices of the Braves.
That's cool.
And that still carries on today, I think.
Mm-hmm. I think so, too. And, you know, whatever was passed down to you and Don, I feel like you and Don, for Jay Chad and me, have been those guys because you learned so much from them, and we've learned so much from the two of you.
I hope so.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'll follow up on that. And, you know, Don was always that way. But I've told Joe this, so it's not a surprise. Even before Joe came over to the radio side, I learned a lot from just watching Joe. If it's, you know, how to conduct yourself on the team plane or how to look and, you know, different things like that. And Joe has been extremely generous to us for a long, long period of time and has always taken care of us. So it was Don for a long period of time, but for me personally, the one guy has always been Joe.
Yeah, definitely. And I hope that one day, a long, long time from now, we get to pass that on to somebody else.
I hope you do. I hope you remember those things. If he's asking about Paul, if he was asking about players, I don't know that we can really honestly say, well, Chipper was that guy or Dale Murphy was that guy, because we don't go to dinner with those guys that much. We don't. We can see how they are the leaders by example. You know, they're not the pom-pom guys and they're not jumping up and down the dugout. But Murph was like that. Chipper was like that. Terry Pendleton was like that before Chipper. And then, of course, after that was Freddie. So yeah. Nick Markakis had that role, too. I would throw all those guys in the same boat.
Jay Chad, step in there and fire one off.
Okay, this question comes from Jill. And she asks, is Paul Bird as hyper and weird as he seems on TV?
Hyper, no, yeah. No, weird,
no.
Yeah.
No, more. No, that's just an inkling.
Yeah, he's unique, man. He's something else. Birdie's a beaut, and he is hyper and he is weird, but in the right kind of ways.
Absolutely.
I'm so glad that we get to see him and interact with him as much as we do.
He loves the game. He loves broadcasting. He wants to do well, and it's as if he is on the mound for 3 hours every night.
Mm-hmm. One thing I like about Birdie, too, while we're talking about it, he told me a few years ago the reason he enjoys doing what he does now, since he's no longer a player, his passion is teaching, and he feels like if he can do something on the broadcast each night to teach someone something that maybe they didn't know, he feels like he succeeded.
I think that's a great description of Paul mm-hmm. in that way, because he wants to – if he has time on a broadcast, he wants to go into detail about how something is working.
Yeah. I know that in the off season, when we start getting ready to start another season, we all miss the game, and you're ready for the game to come back. But we miss the individuals. We miss the people. We get to see each other every single day. And then you go to the off season, we never see each other. And I like having different individuals around. And I think that's what I miss the most about Paul when we're in the off season. And I think about being around you guys again. I think about the people, the individuals, and I mean, we have all sorts of different folks engaged in what we do every single day, and it's fun to be around all of them.
This is from Rob. I don't know what town you're from, Rob. Not that that matters, but he says, on the upcoming road trip, you guys have a day off in Miami. Woohoo! When presented with an off day in a city like that, what's typically on the agenda? We stay at a hotel on the beach, Rob, and so naturally on an off day, I mean, guys are going to sleep in, and then they're going to, well, Jay Chad will have his Speedo on out on the beach.
Yes.
And getting some Raytones. Ben will get up earlier than the other two or the other guys because he wants to work out and go out with gun showing with his sleeveless T-shirt on the beach or right. Around by the pool. But that's how the day starts, and then there's always dinner.
Yeah. Well, it's funny that he asked about the upcoming off day in Miami. We have an upcoming off day. I shouldn't say upcoming, but we have an off day later in the year in St. Louis. Those will be two very different days.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right.
St. Louis, you just, all right, is it time to go play ball yet?
Yeah.
Miami, it's let's squeeze everything of everything we can into this day.
That's well, exactly right.
As far as the upcoming off day in Miami next week, there's a rumor that Mr. Francoeur may be chartering a boat.
Wow.
So maybe boat and a little dinner. Definitely dinner.
That's sounds perfect. Great. Dinner's definitely on the agenda. We mm-hmm. know that. Ben, you got one?
Yeah, this is from Pat in Melbourne, Florida. He's got two questions. And Pat says, hey, fellas, I've loved every episode of the podcast. Couple questions for you. For Ben and Mr. Simpson, excluding Braves broadcasters, if you could call a game with someone past or present, who would it be? It could be one or two people if you can't decide. And then he says, for everyone, with the Brewers coming in this weekend, do you have any awesome Bob Uecker stories? When I'm not listening to you guys, I find myself looking for a Brewers game just to listen to them. Looking forward to hearing your responses. Go Braves.
I'm the same way, Pat. I think Bob Uecker is just an American treasure. He's one of the funniest people I've ever been around in my life. And he usually calls me Joey, and he's just kind of throws his head in the air, "Hello, Joey," and I laugh. It doesn't have to be much. But there are stories that I can't tell you that are just awesome. If I had to pick a couple of guys, I'd want to pick a couple. Probably like Red Barber.
Yeah, that's right up my alley.
Red Barber and maybe Jack Buck. Although I've got too many here in my head swimming around with their hands in the air.
Yeah.
How about me?
Yeah.
Because Harry Carey, Red Barber, Vin Scully, et cetera. But I don't know. Red Barber comes to mind right away.
He was the first guy who came to mind for me, and for a couple of reasons. Number one, he was born in Mississippi, so I'd want to talk to him about that. I know he grew up in Florida, but I think he was in Mississippi until he was about 12 or 13. But anytime you would hear Ernie Harwell, Vin Scully, other broadcasters, they learned so many things from him. And he was always one to give really good instruction. He was very passionate about broadcasting and broadcasting the right way. And those guys always credit Red Barber with what they learned from him. So I don't want to just be around him and learn from him and hear him call a game. Because I've heard Scully and Harwell both talk about what they learned from Red Barber.
You mentioned Ernie Harwell, and thank you for bringing him up. He'd be number two.
Yeah.
Because you talk about a Southern gentleman in every way, always kind, always willing to offer any advice if you ask questions, very friendly, and just what a voice.
Yeah.
My goodness.
Yeah.
While I'm not calling the game, a guy that's still working that I think would be a ton of fun to work with, because I so enjoy his calls in big moments, because he goes absolutely crazy and it's so good, is Tom Hamilton in Cleveland.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. Mm-hmm.
He has tremendous calls. He's so into everything that's going on. And every time I'm watching Quick Pitch on MLB Network, or I happen to maybe be driving down the road and hear the Indians on, I want to listen to him because I think he's tremendous.
Yeah, yeah, if you can catch him on Sirius XM or on their podcast or on their apps, you ought to try and do it, because Tom's brilliant.
Yeah. I'll throw two more in there. Huge Mel Allen fan. Always loved his voice. One of my favorite voices. And then I'll flip it around a little bit. If I were getting to call a football game, I loved Pat Summerall. Mm-hmm. I'd love to sit down in booth and call a game with Pat Summerall. Those are some of my all-time favorites. So that's my answer to Pat's question. Really good question.
You guys are pretty good, too, because we all sample a lot of radio broadcast. And there's some, quite frankly, that just aren't very good, and they certainly aren't entertaining. And I think, you know, we have a broadcast that's good and very entertaining, so you get the best of both worlds.
Thanks, man.
Thanks, buddy.
This question comes from Robert. He said, Robert from Macon here. With Milwaukee in town, I can't help but admit that I really like their club from afar. Craig Council is a great manager, and they seem to be an organization, like the Braves, relying on drafting, developing, and making key acquisitions. What teams, if any, do you guys admire from afar for their culture, organization, and play?
That's an excellent question. Excellent. I will start, and I'll go Yankees. Yankees have always had an excellent organization. They had a bit of a tyrant at the top of things in Mr. Steinbrenner, but they won, you know. And the key to that was that all questions, all budgets, everything flowed to him.
Right.
Not to any committee, not to any corporate type setup. They always had top-notch people in the front office. They had great coaches in the minor leagues and managers in the minor leagues. So I'll start there, and as you answer, I'll come up with a couple more.
Yeah, there's definitely some good answers that you could throw out there. I admire how San Francisco is always a winner. It seems like they've – and it was a bit of a head-scratcher for me when they went the direction that they did after Bochy. Mm-hmm. They've continued to win. But when that organization had Bruce Bochy as a manager and they win three straight, and I don't want to take anything away from their current organization because they're winning, man. But they've always been tough. I've always admired how they went about their business and some of the players that they had. From an aesthetics perspective, and this team is really, really good, but you know when you walk into Dodger Stadium how proud they are of what they've accomplished. You see all the Cy Youngs displayed and all the Gold Gloves displayed. And you walk by all this, all the MVPs, the World Series trophies.
Silver Sluggers.
I mean, I love how they not only preserve but display their history for everyone to see. I think that's tremendous. And it's why I like what they've done here in Atlanta with Monument Grove. You can see a lot of that. But I think so much of that should be displayed. And you walk in there and you know, man, you play for this organization, you put this uniform on, you're going to be part of some really good teams and have some big accomplishments. And I've always admired that.
The Dodgers are an easy one for me. Their commitment to winning and spending and doing what it takes to be competitive every single year. I hate seeing them. I love beating them. But their commitment to winning every single year is awesome. The other team for me that you guys probably, I don't know if you would mention them or not, but it's amazing for me to see them year after year after year after year be a really good competitive team with zero budget, and that's the Rays.
Yeah.
You know, people don't come to their games. It's a great place to work. It's one of my favorite stadiums out there. But they win every single year.
Right.
And to be able to do it the way that they do it and not spend like other teams but be competitive year in and year out and usually make the postseason, it's awesome.
And the way they develop pitching, they're very good at it. They've got a good system in place. So the Rays are right in there with the Yankees for me, and I got one more. And it's a team like the Rays who doesn't have a big budget. They don't have a big metropolis to draw from. But just as we're seeing this year, they had high expectations last year. They faltered. They fixed it. And they do a really good job of development, drafting and development, and that's the Minnesota Twins.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they fell off for 1 year after winning, I think, three straight divisions.
Yeah.
And here they are. They're right back again.
Exactly.
That's one place I'm kind of excited about the balanced schedule next year. We went there in 19, but this is the first time the Braves have been to Minnesota in a long time. But that's – talk about – great stadiums.
Yeah,
that's up there.
Yeah, sure is. And they treat their people well too. And the people who come in as visiting broadcasters. We had a great time when we were up there. Hi guys, it's Meredith from Marietta. Love the show. Here's the question: is clubhouse leadership essential for a ball club success? It seems Freddie was the leader in the clubhouse until this year. Who do you feel needs to step up and take the lead, or has someone already been doing that? Appreciate the phone call. Appreciate the email, Meredith. I think this team has leaders. I think they're still forming. I know that Freddie was probably the leader over the last few seasons. I'd say that in years maybe 2015 through 2020, while Freddie was a leader, you had other guys policing the clubhouse.
Yeah.
It wasn't Freddie. It was probably Nick Markakis. And if you go back a few more years, maybe you throw in – I don't know, David Ross or Chipper or somebody like that. But while Freddie was the face of the team and ultimately one of the leaders of the team, I think the Braves did a nice job of putting other people in the clubhouse who could police the clubhouse. And maybe they're still figuring that out right now. I don't know.
There are guys, they don't have to be the stars of the team. They don't have to play every day. But they can go a long way toward influencing how your team carries itself, how they act, how hard do they play, how soft do they play. And I think of Charlie Culberson immediately. He's a guy who may not play every day, but you felt his influence on the team in the dugout and the clubhouse every day.
Does there need to be a pitcher who's the leader of the pitchers and a position player
Kinda.
Who's the leader of the position players?
Kind of, yeah. It's hard for a pitcher to get on an everyday player.
Yeah.
He's only out there every 5 days as a starter. It needs to be a position player to take care of that group.
I remember Chipper telling a story one time where if a position player had an issue with a pitcher, Chipper was the one to go to Smoltz.
Yeah.
And it's like it was the meeting of the two families, you know?
The two chairmen.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. They're getting together to discuss an issue that might be – not that they're two different teams, but I think you'd need co-leaders, one pitcher, one position player.
Yeah, I agree with that.
This question comes from Matthew in Arkansas, and we've heard from Matthew a few times in the past. It's a really long question, so I'm going to skip a lot of it, but he talked about having the privilege of listening to Pete, Skip, Don, and Joe growing up and how they were some very happy memories for him. And then he goes on to say, I know the team honored Skip and Pete by naming the TV and radio booths in their memory, but I've never toured the booths at Truist. Can you elaborate on what memories of Pete and Skip have been preserved in the booths? So I'll let you guys talk about what we have in our booth.
Well, we have pictures of all of them up on the walls in our booth, and we've told this story on the air. In 2020, when there were no fans, and we just had the placards in the stadium, of course, fans could send their own picture into the team, and they'd produce that into a placard, put it in a seat. They also had former Braves, former players, and they had former broadcasters, and they had one for Don and for Ernie and for Skip and for Pete, and we all have those now. And they're hanging on the wall in our booth, all four of them, on the wall right here behind me. And then we have some other photographs that are framed that are up on the wall that are just various pictures from games of years gone by. And I know you're in some of those, Joe, and some really good storytelling pieces for some of those pictures.
Yeah, we've got a Skip and Pete bobblehead up there, too.
I love the photos that Joe brought in, framed a couple years ago. I'm looking at one right now that's Joe, Pete, Don and Skip, and there's some others in the back. And then we also have a bat rack, and a lot of former players have been nice enough to give us one of their bats that they used at some point in their career. And we have those hanging up with a lot more spots, so we need to get some more bats.
That's funny. I think we got more pitchers' bats up there than we do hitters.
Yeah, they didn't need them.
No, they didn't. I got one here from Deborah. I was laughing hysterically when y'all were talking about Joe stealing J-Chad's dinner on the plane. Can you tell that story again, and did everyone wind up eating what they ordered? Thank you, Deborah, for that reminder. Quickly, the details on that. I had ordered sea bass. I mean, we eat pretty well in this charter, 9 times out of 10. So we had options, and I ordered sea bass.
They give you a menu.
Yeah, and that's what I wanted. And we had a new flight attendant, and he put the tray in front of me, put the food down, and on that tray was a fillet and
cauliflower
and something else. And I started before he reached, pulled his arm back, and then he went, oh, wait. And I said, oh, wait, what is this? And he said, well, it's cauliflower. And I said, oh, I like that. And he goes, yeah, but that's not yours. I gave it to the wrong person. I said, yeah, but I'd rather have this than what I ordered. And he said, oh, well, the man sitting in front of me, in the row in front of me, was Jonathan Chadwick. And his head snapped around, and he's looking between the seats to see if it was his food. And sure enough, it was. And, well, I don't know. I got the filet, and I don't know if Jonathan ever even got to eat that night, and I don't care.
I did get to eat. I had to wait another probably 10 minutes for the food to come out. It's funny. Things like that happen when you're so hungry and your food's about to come. And I'm just really shocked and surprised that that wasn't the last filet on the plane.
That would have been so par for his course.
Classic.
It would have been. This is from Darren in Livingston, Tennessee, and it's story time now because I've always wanted to hear some more details on this. Could Joe go over the pine tar incident? I think George really would have hit the ump if he could have reached him. Does Joe agree? Also, the Don stories are the best. I appreciate you all sharing. I hope his family is aware of how many people he touched. Thanks, Darren in Livingston, Tennessee. You were there to hold back George Brett for the pine tar incident.
Yeah, it was quite a day. It's quite a several minutes there that were kind of scary. I don't think George was ever going to hit the umpire, but he was definitely going to, and he did chest bump Tim McClellan, who was virtually a rookie umpire in those days. Tim McClellan, 6'7". George didn't care. I don't think he was going to punch him. He just was not going to let up on his rant getting in their face. So all those guys loved George. They really loved him, Joe Brinkman included, who had his arm around George's throat from behind trying to hold him back because they didn't want him to get in any more trouble.
Right.
They didn't want him to do something that would cause a suspension or something like that. That's how much they liked George and knew this was very, not so much out of character, but just a real rare occurrence. When the bat boy had the bat taken from him by the Yankees and then presented to the umpire, that's, you know, that's when it all started, and Billy Martin and his little Benny Rooster strut coming out and pointing at the bat, and they waited. They were ready, locked and loaded, waiting for him to do something good to call him on it. So he hits the home run off Goose Gossage, and that was a perfect time to do it. Well, in the meantime, when the argument's going on, somebody grabbed the bat, and it looked like a relay race going to our dugout, and Gaylord Perry wound up with it. Somebody grabbed it, and there was a narrow tunnel that went up a ramp from the dugout to the clubhouse, and somebody just whistled that bat up the tunnel, and Gaylord was right behind it, and he grabbed it and took it to our clubhouse, and they had to come looking for it after the game.
Really?
To confiscate it, to send it to the league or whatever they're going to do with it. They didn't want it to disappear. That was part of it. What else about that day? Well, George, right before they had called him out, he had said to Frank White or John Wathen, I can't remember who he was sitting next to, said, if they call me out for an illegal bat, I'm going to go nuts.
So he said this before. I mean, he knew.
He knew what they were talking about.
Yeah.
And he was ready for bear. And when that happened, it was like, look out, here he comes.
And he just, like a rocket came out of the dugout.
We did an interview a week later. We were on NBC Game of the Week. Joe Garagiola was in our dugout, in our clubhouse, and they wanted to do an interview with George about it. And Joe Garagiola says, I don't know what to ask you anymore. Everybody's asked you about it. I don't know what to do. And I'm lockering next to George. He goes, let Joe do the interview. So I guess that was the start of my career. And Garagiola's like, nah, I don't think that's a good idea. But I wound up doing it on the steps of the dugout. And I did it tongue-in-cheek, like, you know, broadcaster man doing the interview. And I said, George, we haven't seen a look on a man's face like that since Charles Manson. How do you feel about that? Well, that's the way that the interview started, and we had fun with it.
That's incredible. And of course, it was overturned.
Yeah, it was.
And hit the home run. You guys went back and finished the game, right?
We did. We had an off day, and we were going to Baltimore. We had to play a doubleheader the next day, but we landed. This is getting to be probably too long. But we landed in Newark. We sat on the plane waiting to see if Steinbrenner was going to open up the field, if we were really going to play. And then they said, okay, get on the bus. Those of you that weren't ejected, get on the bus. So we got on the bus. We went to the ballpark. We sat on the bus. Okay, everybody, we're not sure yet, but come on in. Let's get dressed. So we sat in the clubhouse for another hour waiting. You know, George is filing all kinds of things with the league to prevent the game from being played. He did open the gates, and there were, you know, a couple of hundred people came in. And then we played.
Yeah.
And Billy Martin had, I think he had Ron Guidry in center field. He had Mattingly playing second base. It was, you know, like a joke.
Yeah.
And it wasn't the same umpires. And Martin came out and was protesting the game because of something that happened. The umpires were way ahead of him. Davey Phillips was the crew chief, and he pulls out this big manifest out of his back pocket, and signed – signed certified papers from all the umpires about how many outs, was there anybody on base, who's been in the game, who's been ejected. I mean, it's a long laundry list of things. And Davey Phillips just kind of slapped that paper at Billy and said, no, I got it right here. And Billy turned around and walked back to the dugout, and we finished the game.
That's great. That's a perfect segue into this next question from Chip Hendricks, because you're talking about umpires, and I thought this is a great question. He says, which umpires do you dread seeing behind the plate, and who are some of the ones you look forward to having behind the plate? Really a fitting question for who's going to be behind the plate tomorrow night, isn't it?
How timely is that question?
Got C.B. Buckner behind the plate tomorrow night.
Yeah, tune in, and if you haven't seen him, you'll understand why. Angel Hernandez is getting a lot of heat for the game he had the other day and how bad it was. But that's not unusual either, and yet he still has a job. The one complaint I've had about bad umpires since I started playing was they never – it's like they've got a job for life.
Yeah.
They never get reprimanded or sent back to AAA, you know, to get more work in and get better. No, they just stay, and they stay, and they continue to be bad. And that's not all umpires, of course. That's just the few that you want to see be fixed.
Yeah. And I thought it was kind of bizarre what we saw the other day with Dan Bellino and Madison Bumgarner. It's as if he's trying to show up the player, and you're just there to enforce the rules. Strike, ball, out, safe.
The problem with that with Madison was Dan Bellino instigated that whole thing, and then he threw him out of the game.
He wanted to throw him out.
Yeah.
That was the whole gist of why he was doing that. I've lost a lot of respect for Bellino as a result. I thought he was a pretty decent umpire, but he had an agenda and followed through on it. There are some good ones still in the game today. We lost a few to retirement and what have you. The Hirschbeck brothers were outstanding ball and strike umpires. They both started suffering concussion and neck issues from foul balls being behind the plate that shortened their career. Steve Palermo, look him up. If you've never heard the Steve Palermo story, look him up. He was the best umpire in baseball. We had him in the American League and was at dinner with some other umpires after a day game, I think in Dallas. And a woman was being accosted in the parking lot outside the restaurant, and he went to her aid, and Steve was shot. It didn't kill him, but it severed his spinal cord, and he was never able to walk without assistance after that. It ended his career, and that was a shame because he was the best umpire I ever saw.
Mm-hmm. Guys in the game today that I do like, I like Ted Barrett. Mm-hmm. I like watching him. I'm a huge fan of Pat Hoberg's strike zone. I think, in my opinion, he's the best behind the plate for umpires. A few other guys. We just saw somebody. Tom Hallion is a good one, yeah.
Dan Isonia.
Dan Isonia is very good. He's from Roswell.
Mm-hmm. The day, let's see. Let me look this up. I got this right.
Jeff Nelson was pretty horrible last night.
Yeah.
He's not on that list.
No, he's not.
Phil Cuzzy. We had him in a really quick game the other night, and he had a good night. I'm trying to remember if he's typically that good, but
I'll give him good marks. Mm-hmm. And we could go through a long laundry list, but I think we've mentioned some of the good ones, and there's some good ones out there that we haven't mentioned too. Yeah. But we definitely know who the two of the worst are, and why they still are working. We don't know.
And I'll give it to Mike Muchlinski. He was behind the plate when the Braves won the World Series.
Yeah,
I think going into that night, I don't know that I thought quite as highly. And now, great job, Mike.
Yes.
Well done.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Who's behind the plate tonight?
Tonight?
Manny Gonzalez.
He's pretty good.
Yeah, Manny is pretty good. We'll get to see him this evening. I think we have time for one more, and I think we know which one it has to be. Maybe this one from Ted.
Lay it on us.
I don't know you. I know you guys don't work on TV, but I was curious if you know why Chip wears really weird, loud sports coats.
Oh,
that's from Ted.
Who wants to start on that one?
I'll start. I don't know why he does it. It's his thing. He has a lot of very loud and flashy sport coats and pocket squares and.
I'd say you should see his shoes.
Yeah, the shoes are horrible. But the sport coats is kind of like his thing. Some of them I like, some of them I don't like, but it's just what he does.
Chip, and I like an original, but he'll come in here with velvet slippers with skulls stitched into the end of them. Like,
yeah.
Where in the heck did you find that?
And socks. He gets socks. I don't know where you buy socks like that. He had on a beautiful navy blue sport coat last night. Velvet, I think.
Yeah, like crushed velvet.
Crushed velvet. It was beautiful. And he had a great shirt on and pocket square that all went together. But then on the plane home from New York, he had on a sport coat that didn't even cover up his back pockets and his pants. It's like he stole it from Tristan, his 11-year-old, and borrowed it for the trip. I was like, buddy, you know, invite your coat down here. We love... It's not trendy. It's not even trendy. It's wild, and we love it. because we never know what we're going to see next.
Yeah, some of the stuff he wears, I feel like all he's missing is one of those long, skinny Gene Rayburn microphones, like
yes.
he's hosting a game show in the 70s.
That's a good point. And if you go back in history among broadcasters, there were some guys that dressed wild. Lindsey Nelson.
Craig Sager.
Craig Sager. My buddy in Seattle, Dave Niehaus, he once wore a sport coat, and Bill Mazeroski said, somewhere there's a horse at Long Acres, the racetrack in Seattle. Somewhere there's a horse at Long Acres going cold. Because of Dave's sport coat.
Yeah. Harry Callis's white shoes that he always wore.
You know, they're on display somewhere in Philadelphia.
It's in the press
right
box.
Right when you get off the elevator in the press box to the right, they're right there.
It's like disco shoes.
I think we need some of those.
Well, it'd be nice. It'd be nice.
Well, I think we're out of time. I know we got to do the SNIT report here in about 10 minutes. We'll go ahead and wrap this up. Wonderful questions, as always. It is so great to hear from all of you. And even if you don't email us, we appreciate you tuning in. Feel free to like or subscribe to our podcast, and you can get us wherever you get your podcasts. And we look forward to doing this again next week. In the meantime, we appreciate you being out there. For Jay Chad and for Joe, I'm Ben, and you have been inside the Braves booth.